This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. At last, it is here, Election Day, the 2018 midterms, a chance for our country to get back on the right track, or as The Onion said, get back on the other wrong track. It's finally here. And so, look, I'm here, Johnny Arola. Cenk Uygur, only the second time, I believe, you've co-hosted the show with me. It's the first day.
First day and Election Day. Yeah. Save it for the big ones. No, first of all, I'm sorry. It's a big letdown for the audience to go from Alyssa Milano to me. Okay,
we're dealing with it.
Yes, but it's Election Day.
Oh my God.
Okay, I'm so psyched. So I voted. Okay,
I'm gonna go in the middle of the day between shows.
You haven't voted yet.
I was too worried the line would be long, and
I
had to prep for 2 hours.
Should I punch you in the face now?
Yeah. Okay. Is that the only option you vote? You get punched in the face. We punch Nazis, not Democrats. Okay.
Okay.
But no, I'm gonna go. And now you've got the sticker, and so you've done pretty much everything you can do. Yeah. And now you just gotta wait and see. Wait and see.
Yeah. And I'm gonna say something totally unacceptable right out of the gate, and then we'll get back to acceptable. But so, and I didn't say this before because I don't ever want to depress the vote, right? And I guess the polls are still open, but there's record turnout at my polling station. Like, I've never had to wait. But there was a line around the corner at my station, and we're in California. And the unacceptable thing I'm going to say is, this is the most important midterm elections of our lifetime. Unless you live in California. Live in my district. Sorry.
It's like this is one of the most eventful California midterms in history,
yeah.
I think.
No, it was the most boring election I've ever been a part of in terms of my district, because it's all like super obvious Democrats with like 28-point leads on Republicans or Democrat versus Democrat, and the Democrat versus Democrat is like corporate versus not quite as corporate Democrat, right? The ballot measures are not that interesting in California.
Where you're wrong, sir.
Okay.
The ballot measures, I think, in California are right up there. Most interesting across the country.
Look, I was proud to vote for two things in California. One was getting mental health care for the homeless.
Yep.
I'm like, when two, I saw I that, I was like, yes, thank God, finally, this is a ballot measure. And I was proud to vote make sure that animals have a little bit more room.
I guess 12, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Because, I mean, they just torture the hell out of them before they kill them and we eat them, right? So can we just not skip the torture part a little bit, right?
Well, that was one definitely where you like the pro side puts forward a statement, the anti side puts forward a statement to help, you know, get you to vote for it. And I thought it was pretty convincing that the pro side was animals are innocent. I was like, you're right. I'm voting yes.
Animals are innocent.
Yes on 12.
And I my congresswoman is like in effect unopposed every year.
I mean,
it's Bass. She wins like 90-10 every cycle. So bless her heart, which is great because I live in a very, very blue district.
In one of the weird, there's been a couple dark moments over the past couple of years where once or twice I've thought, well, what if I wanted to run for an office? And I was like, you know what? I'm going to find whichever like corporate Dems in my area that like is just waiting to be taken down. And I Googled it, and I was like, oh, Karen Bass, she's hella popular. Forget that. Moving on.
Good luck.
I guess I'm going to take pictures of dogs.
So
before we go to our announcements, I just want to quickly say, if you are tuning in, we not only have the first hour, obviously, live on YouTube TV, as we always do. We will also have a second hour. We're doubling up for Election Day with Cenk on for both of those hours. Over the course of those hours, we're going to be talking about a number of different races, more ballot measures, not just from California, all over the country. We also have four guests joining us from around the country. So joining us on Skype very soon, in less than 10 minutes, we'll have Michael Shore from New York. Later on, Nomiki Konst will also be joining us from New York. And we additionally have John Pudner and Ryan Grimm of The Intercept, who are all going to be Skyping in to break down different aspects of this election. We also have lots of news to get to. So there is so much we're going to be doing over the course of these 2 hours.
So in fact, I'll combine the two topics and say I'm going to call the first election right out of the gate in the first 5 minutes because the sitting congressman in that seat has called it. Daryl Issa has conceded his district. Okay. No, I'm not kidding. And so Daryl Issa is not running. He retired. And he admitted on television this morning, my district was never in play.
Like, okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
Yeah. He said, it's over. The Democrats are going to win in my district. Mm. And so I told you guys that Issa wasn't running because he was already beat. Mm. Colonel Applegate almost beat him the last time. Unfortunately, Applegate lost in the primary. But the guy who beat him is a very strong progressive, backed by the PCCC. Mm. He will be the new representative. I believe that's the 48th district.
Yeah.
And so it was nice to start the morning with a concession from Daryl Issa, right? One of the worst Republicans in Congress. And I told you guys we were chasing him out. We chased out Paul Ryan. That's Iron Stash did that. Mm-hmm. Applegate, in essence, chased out Issa. Even if Applegate didn't wind up being the congressman there, he's another just Democrat. He chased out Issa. So we're going to get the 48th district. That's going to be the first flip on the board. There's also six guaranteed wins pretty much in blue districts. Mm-hmm. Those are not flips. But except that they flip from corporate Democrats to good Democrats in some of those races. And so we'll talk about that later in the day. My son woke up this morning. He's 8 years old, and he thought Election Day was yesterday. So he comes up to me and goes, Baba, did he win? Did he win? And I'm like, who? He's like, Ojeda.
What? Your son knows who Richard Ojeda is.
Yeah, because I ran the ads for him, which is totally inappropriate because they're like,
especially those. You're going to get nightmares.
Yeah, he's got dead people on his back. Okay. But he's like, did he beat Carol Miller?
He knows both people in the race. I could not have named both sides of a congressional race until I was 19 or 20 years old.
Well, you know why? Because he thought, how dare she? He's going around the house saying that all day long. Yeah. Anyway, so we'll find out later today, though. Oh, look, I got to tell you, keep it real, right? Today's about reality. You know, there's hope, there's encouragement, there's all this stuff, and I believe there's a real blue wave. One of the main things we're going to discuss over the next 12 hours, and we're kidding around with Edwin, our stage manager here, about I'm going to run out of time. I mean, there's no way we're going to get to all the content in just 12 hours. And I'm not really kidding. Mm-hmm. Today's about keeping it real. And last poll is Ojeda's down by 7. Okay.
It's tough.
Yeah. And so look, it's Trump won the district by 49 as West Virginia's third district. It would be huge if we won, but he is down.
Yeah.
So now I want to tell you guys a couple of things. First of all, I can take this off now because I have this on, right? And it says vote. Remember the 6th of November. Laura Zuckerman, one of the members of TYT, made this shirt, hoodie and glasses is her handle. Thank you, Laura.
That's
awesome.
It's a
wonderful shirt. I was proud to wear it this morning. And ranking number one, slightly above Trader Joe's, for place I get recognized most, is a voting station.
So, makes sense. Politicon's probably up there, too.
Yeah, well, but those don't count. Right?
Yeah.
But Laura, people liked your shirt at my voting station.
It's awesome. I've got one. I can't wait to wear it.
Yep.
Can I double down on what you said about that we're going to run out of time, even though we're doing 12 hours today? Just a sort of behind the scenes thing. I don't know if you guys know this, but we've done several thousand hours of this together. In all of that time, no matter how much or how little we produce for a show, we have never, ever looked at each other and just said, I got nothing for the next 5 minutes. Like, we've never, ever not had stuff to talk about, which is bizarre. If we have any talent, that's what it is.
Okay, so this is, of course, on shoptyt.com if you want to buy this, shoptyt.com. Okay, now, I want to show you the thermometer because we're going to be checking it throughout the day, and you guys have been great the last couple of days. So we were at 27,661 when we first started the membership drive about 2 months ago. We're now at 34,090. So we've added about 6,500 or so. Okay. So here's my audacious goal for today. because today's a giant day. And we launched tyt.com/sponsor, which I'll explain in a second if you haven't heard about it. Can we see 35,000 today? So that'd be adding nearly 1,000 in one day.
But I thought you were going to say 40.
Yeah.
Okay. 35, no, very reasonable.
Yeah. So when we launched the membership drive, we almost added 1,000 the first day. So it's possible. It definitely is possible. And so I would love to see that. And if you're already a member, you could do tyt.com/gift, as a lot of you did yesterday, where you say, hey, I'm going to give the gift of membership to my dad or my brother who loves the show, or my dad who might not love it, but I really want him to hear it and keep an open mind, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
And then we launched tyt.com/sponsor, which allows you to buy them in bundles, 10, 20, et cetera. And we got a toolkit for you guys on how to hand them out, or you could just hand them out any way you like, to strangers, to friends, to groups. If you take advantage of that, it helps build progressive media. We really, really need this to be sustainable. And again, think about today. If you're enjoying our coverage, imagine what you would watch today. You'd watch, you know, standard milquetoast anchors telling are not remotely excited about who's going to win and who's not going to win, whereas we're on pins and needles. So, and if you just want to do a simple old, you know, hey, I like this, I'd like to join, tyt.com/jank. Even on John's show.
Or tyt.com/John. Please show at least a little bit of loyalty. But yeah. And
you know what you should have told me?
What?
How dare you?
How dare you? I'm being your kid, being him, while wearing a Fearless shirt or something like that. You might think, like, well, today's the big day. We finally get to write things as a country. And that is to some extent true. And hopefully that will happen. But this is not the end of the book. This is at best the end of a chapter. After today, we still have 99% of the work to do, not just, you know, in terms of fixing all the problems of this country, but getting ready for 2020. Like you've been saying, this is the appetizer, but the meal comes in 2 years. And before then, we need to run awesome candidates. We need to support them and promote them ahead of time. And so becoming a member now not only gets you access to all of our shows for this midterm, but gets ready for all of the content we're going to produce over the next 2 years as we try to put our country back to where it needs to be.
Yeah, and now let me tell you about the state of the elections as they stand this morning. Man, it is razor thin. On the Senate side, all the races are toss-up. Not all, but a lot of them. And so we already told you yesterday, Missouri, Nevada, Arizona, and Indiana are basically all tied. Bredesen had closed the lead in Tennessee, not fully, but he's now in the ball game against Marshall Blackburn.
Yeah.
But then this morning, bad news. I look up and Bill Nelson, Tester in Montana, and even Manchin, who all had good sized leads. Now those are smaller leads. Mm-hmm. So look, it's possible that there could be a huge swing in either direction here today. In either direction in the Senate.
Yeah.
So it could be disastrous if the Republicans pick up all those seats.
Yeah, and by the way, if Bill or Ben Nelson in Florida can take it, he better thank Andrew Gillum so much.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So huge races that we're going to be following. We do have to take our first break. When we come back, though, we're going to be joined by Michael Shore, who I believe has been mentally tracking every single race in the country. So he's going to be breaking down some of the big ones, giving us an idea of what we should expect as the returns start to come in after.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
this. Welcome back to the Damage Report. I'm here, obviously, Cenk Uygur here for the entirety of the two-hour show today. And very excited to welcome to the show now Michael Shore of I-24 News joining us via Skype. Michael, welcome to the show.
I still like being introduced as Michael Shore from the Young Turks. Can we do that again, John?
Okay, Michael Shore from the Young Turks, kind of a stickler, joins us now. How's it going, Michael?
It's going well, thanks. And the light will even get better here. But it's going well. It's Election Day. Everybody knows how much I love Election Day, and I know how much you guys do too.
We do, certainly do. It looks like it might be raining there. You're in New York, I believe, correct?
Yeah, that's Times Square behind me, and it is in fact raining. I think Governor Cuomo and Kirsten Gillibrand will still do well in the city.
Yeah, they'll probably be fine. So look, Cenk is here as well. We both have questions for you. But I've been reading a lot about, across the country, issues with gigantic lines and problems at a variety of polling places. And I've heard actually at New York that it's pretty common. Has that been your experience?
I mean, you know, I grew up here and I voted here, and I don't remember crazy lines or big problems. But I know in the boroughs now, because of sort of an influx of population moving to the outer boroughs where they didn't have a lot of that, the logistics in hand, and that it's been problematic. But I haven't heard anything specifically today. And to be frank, I haven't really been following New York as well, even though I'm sitting here now.
So, Michael, first of all, I think that your lighting situation is symbolic. first, there was darkness, and then there was light brought to you right at the top of the day. And I want to do a correction, by the way, from the first segment. I said 48th district for ISA. It's actually the 49th district, and Mike Levin is very likely to win that seat, as ISA himself conceded this morning on television. 49th district is actually Harley Reuter versus Rohrabacher. It's another seat that the Democrats have a good chance of picking up, which leads me to my question, Michael. I know where the polling is. It's at about 26.5 seats for the Democrats to pick up, according to Real Clear Politics. I know Nate Silver has got it at 39. He went past me. I had it at 38. I think it could be all the way up to 50 Democrats who win 50 additional seats. So what's your sense of where it is as we stand in the morning?
Yeah, I mean, my guess would be closer to where you are, where Nate Silver is, about 36 seats. I think the California seats are going to be interesting. The 22nd is Devin Nunes' seat. If we see Steve King go down in Iowa, maybe we think that, oh my goodness, let's see what happens with Devin Nunes in California. That's a race that Andrew Jans has been running pretty well in. 3 points was the last poll I saw there. It was an outlier to most of the polling, but still, it means that there may be a close. And then I look at a Mark Campa-Najjar in the 50th. He did 48 and 49, the 50th district. That's Duncan Hunter's district there. If you see a real rejection of a lot of these sort of Republicans that have been in trouble or are controversial, that kind of, I think, is an indication that Democrats could do even better than some of the conservative Real Clear Politics, Nate Silver type projections here. I do think there are going to be seats that are surprising. And I think that on the Senate side, there may be as well. But I think when you look at the House, I think that range seems to be pretty comfortable for a lot of the pollsters. And looking at this polling, too, a lot of it has changed as we've gotten close. Oh,
might be skipping a little bit. Hopefully we'll be able to get him back. One of my concerns until Michael returns is, so we're obviously very interested in a lot of races in California, which isn't, the norm for midterm elections. But the frustration for me is that not only do these, the polls close latest because it's California and it's, here on the West Coast, but California is notoriously bad at counting votes. And so I wonder if in some of those, if 48 through 50 are tight races, if Nunes is a tight race, I wonder if we'll actually know tonight or even tomorrow. Sometimes it seems to take longer. Michael, are you there? Looks like we're still having issues with Michael. So okay. That is my frustration, is that if things are a little bit tighter than we thought, I wonder if we will actually know who will control Congress at the end of the night.
Yeah, there's some chance we won't. But hey, since we are worried that we might not be able to fit everything into 12 hours, we can go another 12.
Exactly.
And still be with you in the morning. All right. No, in all seriousness, that's a real issue, because these races are much more up in the air than they normally would be.
Yeah.
So by the time you got to California, oftentimes you had at least a sense of how things are going to shake out. And this, even if there's a victory for the Republicans or Democrats, you'd have some sense of the size of it. But given, you know, a couple of factors here, and one is the wave. Two is that if you notice, Michael Schur normally is, says, you know, he's pretty down the middle on the polling, but he believes the polling's a little off as well, a little conservative as well, right?
Yeah.
And so those unlikely voters, et cetera, are a real, real question mark. So it's not just 48, 49, 50 in California. There's also the first district. Laura Denny, who's a great Just Democrat progressive candidate. And we'll, throughout the day, we'll tell you about all the Just Democrats, how they're doing, et cetera. But does she have a shot? Normally, she wouldn't in the first district, which is pretty conservative in California. California is incredibly liberal in most of it. Mm-hmm. But the bottom and the top are weirdly red, right? Yeah. So at least they were, but maybe we wipe them all out in California. Yeah. And so, and that would be an interesting wave. And I want everybody to know something that we talked at the very end of yesterday's show about. Early indicator will be Coburn in Virginia's 5th District. She's running against Bigfoot erotica lover Riggleman. Okay, Coburn's very progressive. The Democrats did not believe in her, did not back her, because they thought she couldn't win 5th District, which includes Charlottesville. But now she's tied. And so that's a bellwether. If she wins, we're in great shape. If she wins easy, we're in phenomenal shape. Mm-hmm. If she loses, it doesn't mean uh-oh, but it means it's tougher sledding than we thought.
Yeah, and I'm nervous. I've been telling you for weeks now that I'm going to remain nervous, but my gut still does at this point say that I don't think that it's going to be super difficult to know a couple hours in how this thing is going to play out. In the specifics, sure, but in general, in control of the House, I think that we will know fairly early on with a number of those races along the East Coast. My concern is that if things are a little bit tighter, and especially if California, if the races in California are the deciding factor, and we don't know immediately how things are going to go, here is what I do not want Donald Trump to be able to do. Have the cloak of ambiguity about the results of the election to pitch things his way coming out of today. Because he's already, if the Dems take the House, he's still going to say it was illegitimate, voter fraud, all of that. If we don't know for sure, God only knows what actions he will take in the interim. That said, we do have to take a break. We come back. We're gonna try to reconnect with Michael Schur. Hopefully, we'll get lucky with that. If not, lots of other news to get to. So we'll see you on the other side. Welcome back to the Damage Report. I believe we have Michael Schur on the line. Michael, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, good to see you. And with good lighting right off the bat. We don't have to ease into it. Okay, so look, you've covered a lot of elections. I am trying to prepare myself for the worst, that the possibility that tonight could not go well, and I know that there's at least like a 1 in 5 chance of that happening. As you are going to be covering this hour by hour, what do you think will be some early indications that tonight might not play out like some on the left would like?
I guess if you get an early call out of Indiana, which is always called early, if you find that Joe Donnelly is down by so much in early voting and they're able to call that race early, that's a bad sign right there. If you look at some of the New York races in upstate New York and races that they're trying to flip, different districts like the 19th district, if those races don't begin to flip, you look down in Florida and the numbers coming out of North Florida in terms of the amount of people that are voting there are higher than South and Central and West Gulf Florida, then I think that you have trouble. I wouldn't say that you're going to know early what the story is, because so much of what the House races will determine the House races is happening in California on the West Coast. It's happening in other states that aren't going to report until a little bit later. So I think you have a little bit of time before you start getting depressed.
So, Michael, the Senate is not getting as much coverage because it's expected to be a little bit even, not move much, and the Democrats have a harder time picking up the Senate than they do the House, even though the margin is smaller. But, you know, you got basically a tie in Missouri, Nevada, Arizona, and arguably Indiana, and you've got very close races in Tennessee, West Virginia, now closer than expected at least, Florida, and then Montana now closer than expected. So, is there some chance that the Republicans actually pick up a significant amount of seats in the Senate? I mean, if they're all tied and you don't get the wave and you don't get the unlikely voters, and those are, I mean, the polling is generally real. So is it possible they pick up 4 or 5 seats and people are like, oh my God, it turns out Trump was right. There was a red wave, at least in the Senate.
Well, the trap that many Democrats may have, and obviously won't know until tomorrow, fallen into is being hopeful about polling that was close in a number of states. And you can look at Nevada, Tennessee, and Texas right off the bat as states where Democrats said, oh, look, we're going to win these states. Oh, my God, Phil Bredesen is beating Martha McSally. Oh, look at Beto. He's within 4, 5, 6, but he's been losing the whole way. So I think that the optimism that Democrats have may be misplaced there. And there are always reasons to think that it could go the other way. But yes, you're absolutely right, Cenk. The Republicans could certainly, and it wouldn't be a big shock if they increased their lead in the Senate by 3, 4, 5 seats. That could really happen. If the Republicans sweep these Senate races, you have to remember these are all in states that Democrats have to defend seats. They're states that were seats that were won the night Barack Obama won re-election, surprising a lot of people that they were won by Democrats. Heidi Heitkamp has won. John Tester was not necessarily supposed to win re-election in 2012. Yeah. Claire McCaskill got lucky. So those are seats that they're defending now in a different set of circumstances.
And if I remember correctly, I think Claire McCaskill might have won in 2012 by 1 point or around 1 point. It was as close as could be, even in a year that was pretty good for the Democrats, obviously.
And she had Todd Akin then too, so that was a flawed candidate running against her.
Yeah, I want to ask you though, I guess this is going to go a little bit more towards your gut. I mean, obviously you're looking at the polling and we don't know for sure. A lot of these polls are close. But I am curious, based on your experience, are there any races that people either in the media or just out there are treating as if they're closer than you think they really are, or ones where people are being overly optimistic about the possibility of a Republican going down?
Well, I think that if you look at Republicans, you would say that Republicans are being overly optimistic about New Jersey. I think Bob Menendez is going to win pretty well there. I think Democrats, if there's a surprise race tonight, there's been weird polling coming out of Michigan. Debbie Stabenow's race has tightened over the last few days. But I think the one that everyone's looking at, listen, Beto O'Rourke has gotten a lot of attention. He's run an unbelievable campaign. Going down and seeing him campaign in person was something really unique and certainly exciting for people who want to defeat Ted Cruz. But again, I said it before, the polling has really, there's never been a poll that's been great except one that shows him within 3 or 4 points. He's been losing the entire way. I think that one of the races that I'm looking at, I don't think they're being overly optimistic, but Andrew Gillum has done something pretty special in Florida. And if it turns out that Bill Nelson wins, if it turns out that Carlos Curbelo loses his House race there, if it turns out that they flip a seat like the 6th District of Florida, Brian Massey, where they weren't supposed to win there, if that happens, if Donna Shalala wins, a lackluster, boring campaign that she's run, if she wins, it will be because of Andrew Gillum, that he changed the dynamics in that race and he brought and appealed to a whole host of voters who wouldn't otherwise have been out there in Florida. So I think that's one thing that is it. But again, if we're totally wrong about that, that could breed real disappointment for the left.
So, Michael, there's a battle within the Democratic Party that isn't getting a lot of attention right now, understandably, because we're all fighting the White Walkers. But there is division on what's the right strategy to beat Republicans. So one school is the conventional wisdom school, which is you run more conservative Democrats in more conservative areas, both states and districts. And so that's the Heidi Heitkamp, Joe Donnelly camp, right? The other school is the new school, which is progressives, saying, no, you run real hardcore populist progressives in red districts, because populism is the right answer. So that's Richard Ojeda in West Virginia's 3rd, Kara Eastman in Nebraska. If it turns out Ojeda and Eastman win and Heitkamp is already going to lose, but Donnelly might, and let's say he loses, I don't want him to, but let's say, does that change anybody's mind in Washington, or are they just going to go, nope, I don't believe it. You should still run establishment Democrats who are as close to Republican as possible in red districts?
Well, it doesn't change it on a dime, but what it will say is that there are other ways of doing this. And I think Kara Eastman and Ojeda are good ones to look at for that. I do think, though, that the fight isn't as much of a fight when you get out into the country and you start talking to people, because a lot of people don't know what's going on. It's really the micromanaging that has done that. So it's still got a little ways to go before the party and the people in the party say, yeah, we should start running progressives everywhere. And I also think there's something about a midterm election where strategy comes into play. You look at Kara Eastman, you look at Ojeda, they're in races that weren't going to be paid attention to as much by Democrats anyway. There wasn't going to be a candidate that they put in those races, the Democratic Party put in those races, that would have competed from the quote-unquote, you know, I don't like the word, but the establishment candidate going up against the establishment or elected incumbent Republican there. So it's not like it was an either-or in those cases. It was a let's just put this person here. Now, of course, Kara Eastman had a race. There was a race in the primary there, but it wouldn't have been a race, I don't think, that in a general election the Republicans would have spent a ton of money on. The Democrats would have spent a ton of money on either. I do think that their candidacies being successful, even in losing, I think will awaken Democrats to say we don't have to play by the same set of rules in every race the way that we have. Kara Eastman came close, or Kara Eastman won. Either one, I think, is going to allow people to think that we don't have to have a nominee who is exactly like the nominee that would have been there 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years ago.
One more quick question. Again, just based off your experience covering a lot of these elections, and especially with, you know, how high the stakes are, not just in this midterm, but going forward to 2020, what does your gut tell you? How long do we have after today before we're effectively in the 2020 race?
Yeah, I think probably. Well, first of all, I think that you're going to hear from Robert Mueller in the next few weeks once all the dust settles from what happens today and tomorrow. I think there are going to be some recounts. I think there are going to be some races that are fought longer than just tonight and tomorrow. But I do think once you hear from Mueller and once the posture of the next House, who the leadership's going to be, I think that's going to matter a lot. But I think starting after the State of the Union in January, that in February of next year, you're going to hear Democrats starting to declare that they're going to run for office, because it's going to take that long and the races start that much earlier. It's less than a year then till the Iowa caucuses. And I think that this stuff is starting a lot earlier. So I think that's when you're going to start hearing who is going to run for office. And I think if you're going to mount a challenge to Donald Trump as a Republican, you have to start that early as well. I'm sure John Kasich, once the governor's race in Ohio is decided, is going to be a part of that. One thing to remember, too, that's really important tonight are these governor's races. And people don't understand that, but the governor's races in 2018 matter so much about the House races in 2022, because that's when the new districts are going to be drawn. Yeah. The more districts that Democrats win, the easier it is going to be for a 2020 Democrat, if they win, to govern because of the 2022 layout for the House. So this is a lot of, like, you know, inside baseball stuff, but it's really important to remember how important these governor's races are tonight. And Democratic pickups there mean a lot for what the House and Senate will look like and what the House will look like in 2022.
And certainly in this cycle, we've got a lot of great candidates in those gubernatorial races. Well, Mike Ashore, we do have to go, but thank you so much for joining us. It looks like it's going to be an exciting night.
I miss you guys. All I want to do is be there tonight, but I have other commitments, electoral commitments. So
agreed. Well,
talk later.
Have a good one. And we're going to take a short break. We come back. Hopefully, the Intercept's Ryan Grimm will join us. More on the election after this. Welcome back to the Damage Report, everybody. A few more announcements, right, Cenk?
Yes. First of all, we are taking your comments. I'm going to start with members in a second. Also, I want you to know, you know, we're live here, of course, right now. YouTube.com/TYT is where you could find us live. But we're also live throughout the day on Facebook.com/RebelHQ. We talked about Ojeda a little bit, actually, throughout the show. We're slightly obsessed. Eric Beiler is at his campaign headquarters in West Virginia, and he'll be streaming from there later today. And Katie Halper's covering Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's headquarters. Nomiki and Francis are in New York. And then MoveOn's helping us with a stream at Randy Bryce, Kara Eastman, Beto O'Rourke, Andrew Gillum, Stacey Abrams. So all those headquarters are going to be on Facebook.com/RebelHQ. So don't miss that. And then we want you guys telling us your stories. I've got already one in from Alabama at tyt.com/share. So if you've got any story about a heartwarming story, trouble with a voting story, any shenanigans, or something that you want to share about the election, tyt.com/share. If you want to find out who the Just Democrats candidates are, because there's still a very long time before the polls close, if you want to see if you've got one in your neck of the woods, tyt.com/JD lets you know who all the Just Democratic candidates are, and also has a link to the interviews that I've done with them and John has done with them on Rebel headquarters. And so let me start with one member comment here. saying, this is Hillary saying, would be funny if it was that Hillary.
Because, thanks a lot.
Right. You know, because it starts with, I just became a TRT activist.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Hillary.
So thank you. As of today, she explains, I'm heading to the polls to vote for the progress we so desperately need. I'm feeling confident and proud of all of us. I adore all the young Turks for fighting for the future of not just our nation, but humanity in general. I watch every single day on YouTube, but I wanted to be official. So here's our fight today across our country for all progressives. Thank you. Yeah. So, look, we try to represent you guys and we fight for you every day. So if you're a member, then you are a Young Turk and you make this possible. So tyt.com/join to become a member. Thank you.
Okay, so why don't we bring in our next guest. Very happy to welcome to The Damage Report, The Intercept and TYT contributor, Ryan Grimm. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing good, but it's still early. Things could go south pretty fast, I guess. So I know,
yes.
I know you're traveling across the country right now. I believe you're headed towards New York, correct?
That's right. Yep.
Okay. And what races are you going to be covering when you get there?
So, I mean, the race I'm most interested in is Jess King, actually, in Pennsylvania on the way to New York. She's a similar race to Richard Ojeda, to J.D. Scholten out in Iowa, Leslie Coburn in Virginia. These are people who have run in districts where normally Democrats would recruit a business owner who's a veteran and a prosecutor, preferably all three of those things, and tell them to run as far to the right as they can, raise them as much money from big donors as they can, and kind of sneak in underneath a terrible Republican. Instead, they're all running on populist platforms, and Jess King is doing it in a unique way in that it's all local organizing. Like, a lot of people have gotten a lot of help from around the country, whereas hers is, it's really an organic kind of Amish country uprising that's going on out there, and people are telling me that the turnout is just incredible so far.
So I want to talk to you. You sort of got into it with your first answer, but your most recent piece on The Intercept, where you talk about sort of the rejuvenation of a new form of the Democratic Party. Could you explain what your thesis was there?
Yeah, like when Donald Trump was elected, the first that you heard from Democratic leaders was, it's too bad we lost, but when you lose, it's time to compromise, and maybe we can work with Donald Trump on an infrastructure bill, even while he builds internment camps. And the kind of grassroots of the Democratic Party said, no, how about we oppose this guy up and down the board? And a lot of them had not been active in the past, and they blamed themselves in some ways for what happened and said that we're not going to let that happen again. And have turned themselves not just into voters, but into organizers.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about this, because I've been thinking about this experience politically that we've been undergoing for the past couple of years. And I wonder, how do you separate out the effect, as you describe in your piece, of Donald Trump becoming president and inspiring new people to vote? How do you separate that out from the rise of Bernie Sanders and the inspiration that he provided in the 2016 election to tons of new people to get involved, and you'll get involved during the 2016 election, many of which have then gone on to run themselves in the meantime? Like, how do you separate out the effects of those two influences?
So I think they're related phenomena, and a ton of the people who really got involved after the election, inspired by Trump, a lot of them were Hillary Clinton supporters, but they were very kind of mild supporters. They loved the idea of the first woman president. It was something that they'd always wanted to see in their lifetime. But they agreed with Bernie when it came to his platform. And there wasn't this animosity that you see at the top level of the Democratic Party toward him. They were fine with him, and they would have voted for him for president, but they just wanted to see a woman elected president. These are not people who paid a ton of attention to politics. They weren't out door knocking. And so they have become natural allies now with the people who supported Bernie Sanders in the primary. And what that means is that basically the entire voting base of the Democratic Party is aligned behind these kind of Sanders principles. But it's only at the top that you have people who are pushing back against what Sanders believed in.
So, Ryan, real quick, I want to ask you, look, has any of this broken through to the Democratic leadership? The fact that James Thompson did better than Ossoff, the fact that Kara Eastman beat Brad Ashford, the fact that Ojeda has closed a 49-point lead, has any of that broken through? Or, like, keeping it real, in Washington, is it still at a zero? Like, no, not interested. We don't believe in progressives at all.
The only part that's broken through is the fundraising capacity, but the difference is that, you know, the consultants have seen that, oh, there's actually money to be made here, but the way they go about it, and you probably get these emails in your inbox, is like, it looks like a debt collection notice. Beto's going to lose if you don't, you know, send $5 and your electricity is going to be cut off. basically separating the elderly people on their email lists from their money, the complete opposite of the way that people like Sanders worked their email lists, which was to be, you know, hopeful and inspirational and get people bought into a movement. So, you know, they're seeing that part of it. But no, within the kind of Washington political class, there's still a firm belief that things like Medicare for All just don't play well, and they don't care what the polls say. You know, they're not going to believe their lying eyes. They're going to believe their guts and their you know, wealthy neighbors who and their social circles, which say that no, this is not the path forward. So. You know, it looks like it's going to be very difficult to win by persuasion. It's going to just have to be annihilation.
Yeah, it looks like they're probably going to find the arc of politics over the next couple of years to be pretty surprising then. Yeah. Ryan, thank you for joining us. I appreciate your contribution.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break. We come back a little bit more in this first hour of our Election Day coverage after this. Welcome back to what remains of the first hour of the Damage Report's Election Day coverage, a day where hopefully at this point you've already gone and voted. It is tremendously important. It is one of the most powerful things you can do to shape the path of your country and the world, indeed, because we're such an important one. But your vote is not the only source of power that you have. You also have your money. And where you choose to put your money, what use you put it to, is important as well. And that is why we recommend using Aspiration, a financial institution with a conscience. This is an environmentally friendly financial institution where your money can go to actually making the country a better place on a daily basis. So use your vote, use your money, put it in the right place and to the right use. You can go to aspiration.com/TYT to start adding a little bit of conscience to the way your money is used today. Now, with that said, I do want to also mention, we've been talking, like, our analysis throughout has been the polls are super close in some of these races. They're pretty good in other areas, but we don't know exactly how it's going to break. And so I have been off looking at any indication of how that's going to play out that I can. I did see one interesting thing this morning. It's probably nothing, but NBC Politics tweeted, according to Google Trends, Donde Votar is the top trending search on Google in the US today, up 3,350%. So that is where to vote. I mean, come on, how awesome is that?
Okay.
Now, look. Keeping it real, there's a lot of concerns about the mobilization of different groups. Like, will the youth vote actually turn out? Will the Hispanic vote turn out? I did see one thing that scared me a little bit. So in Texas, early voting is up significantly. But I also saw a ranking of the counties of Texas, and the two at the very bottom were the highest percentage Hispanic counties. So that was a little bit disconcerting. But hey, Google Trends, some good news for you.
Yeah, that is, I don't know that there is a sentence in the English or Spanish language that puts more fear into the Republican hearts than Latinos typing in where to vote today. Okay. And so let's go get them, brothers and sisters. And I've said this a lot, including yesterday, especially for Latinos. I mean, look, now it's for Muslims and Jews as well. It's always been the case for blacks, but They came for your family, man. You're going to do something about it, or you're just going to sit there? And I'm not in the sit there group. That's not how we roll.
Yeah.
And so if you're in those groups, the attacks are deeply personal. And I just don't understand people who just sit back and take it.
Yeah.
So we actually have a great outlet. It's called voting, and it's today. Right, so you don't have to do anything crazy. You don't have to do anything stupid like the right wing does. All you got to do is vote. It's actually incredibly powerful. And in situations like this, it actually works. And I know that people get frustrated, especially young, because it seems like it never makes a difference. You've got to trust me, man. I think we've earned that trust over the last 16 years. This is the one time it definitely would make a difference.
Definitely. We desperately need to correct course as a country. And we've got an amazing opportunity for that. And along the way, like we say a lot of times, there's some candidates that you got to support, even though we don't love them. We challenge them in the primaries, but now you got to vote for them. But in huge portions of the country, you do get to be enthusiastic about these amazing candidates for House and Senate, but also for the gubernatorial races as well. There are more awesome candidates than I can remember. Now, that said, Cenk, thank you for joining us for the first hour. The second hour of the Damage Report election special continues after this. Welcome back to hour two of the Damage Report midterm specials, kicking off a full day of coverage of these midterms here on the TYT network. And Cenk, I think you wanted to give people more information about how that's going to go.
Yep. First of all, we've obviously got Damage Report. We're in the second hour now, so we're doing 2 hours, John and I, together. And then the next show up is Aggressive Progressive, and there'll be 2 hours of that. I'll be on with the first half hour, and one of the things that I'm hoping we can discuss on Aggressive Progressive is what happens if the Democrats do win the House? What will be the progressive priorities, and how will we get the Democrats to actually follow progressive priorities? That's a super interesting conversation, one that we will probably return to at the end of the night if the Democrats do actually win back power, because currently the Democratic Party is not really planning to do anything. Okay, I mean, I got news for you. You're going to be shocked and chagrined by that. So is it enough to stop Trump? Well, it's a good start, and I'll take it, right? And they will investigate him, no question about that, and I'll take that as well. But we're going to have to push leadership if we want real progressive policy priorities, because they're not there yet.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that on Aggressive Progressive. And then after that, at 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Pacific, John and Anna are going to go through a lot of the ballot measures across the country. We touched on it last night in our special pre-election coverage. And I think there's just some amazing ballot measures out there that you should all know about, and I hope that you voted on. Again, the rise of marijuana, it's almost all over. I mean, Utah is going to legalize today. But it's not just that. There's important campaign finance reform, ballot measures, et cetera. But John and Anna are going to do that at 5 o'clock Eastern. Then 6 to 8, we start, well, of course, the Young Turks. We'll do our regular show. It'll start with just Ben and I, old school in a sense. We've covered now. Now, we've been on for over 16 years, so 8 elections together.
I think you started with JFK, I think. It's been a good run.
Yeah, so, I mean, it feels that way, right? And then Jimmy Dore, I believe, is going to join us. I know he's a little under the weather.
He's been sick for a good bit now.
Yeah. And then we got some great guests for you guys on our election coverage that starts at 8 o'clock Eastern, and it will go for as long as we need to go. But we'll start calling elections immediately at 8 o'clock, because there's a lot of elections that are obvious that start on the East Coast. Yeah. So the polls close at 8 o'clock, and so here, cross your fingers, probably the first one we'll call is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Mm-hmm. And so and keep on watching the whole night, and I want to thank the members, as always, for allowing us to do this. Otherwise, we couldn't possibly do it. And by the way, you know, I talk about sustainability, and it's absolutely real, and we've got to keep this place running. But also, it's not just sustainability. It's the more resources and the more members we have, the more programming we can do for you guys. And so TYT.com/join to become a member. And then we launched recently TYT.com/gift if you want to give the gift of membership to people that you know, either progressives who would enjoy it or conservatives to open their minds, right? Family members, friends, etc. And now yesterday we started TYT.com/sponsor, and that is to sponsor a lot of folks, 5, 10, 20, 100 people to get the gift of membership. And we show you how you can help distribute it, the sponsorships that you bought. And of course, it helps Home of Progressives. And that's a huge part of why we're doing it. We build this stuff with you guys, and if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't even have the studio to begin with, let alone everything else. So, speaking of which, I want to go to just 2 quick comments here. Young Feminist wrote in, Cenk and John, I want to let you know that I'm announcing my campaign for Congress. So that's fun, okay, on a day of election to announce it. saying, I'm in New York's 25th district, where we are about to elect one of Chuck Schumer's friends, Joe Morell, to a vacant seat. I'm sick of the Democrats. I'm ready to fight for progressive values in upstate New York.
Awesome. Well,
yes, that's the kind of fighting spirit we love. So go get him. And who knows, maybe you'll be a just Democrat, and maybe we'll get you on the show one day.
That'd be awesome.
Believe me, the 2020 elections start tomorrow.
Some would say they've already started.
Yeah.
I don't think Joe Biden is traveling as much just because he hasn't seen some of the best parts of America and he's catching up.
Yeah, right. Or Bernie releasing a book and Elizabeth Warren is.
Oh, I've got it pre-ordered. I can't wait to see what he's got in that. 27th. Yeah. Get it.
So, and then last one here is tyt.com/share. We're asking you to share your stories from today. Good stories, bad stories, irregularities, or good stuff. So first one's in from Anthony Marlowe. I arrived early, lines that weren't long at the time. I didn't have any trouble in Alabama. People were friendly, even had an elderly white man talking to a young black woman and her son about voting. It was nice, but it isn't real. Mm-hmm. For a second, you had me at nice. Anyway, he said, I hope Alabama turns blue so we get another election instead of descending into fascism. Many Republicans running unopposed here, and it's a sad state of affairs that our Republican candidate for governor is still paying Robert Bentley's legal bills. Anyway, it's my birthday, and TYT doing a 12-hour show is a great present. Mm-hmm. Much love, Anthony.
Awesome.
Much love right back at you, Anthony, and happy birthday.
Awesome.
All right,
okay.
John.
Lots
next?
To talk about if you guys get that first video ready. We're in the last push in this election, just a few hours left to go in voting and all that. We're trying to make clear what the stakes are. And Donald Trump is trying to do the same, but he's having a little bit of trouble doing so, as you'll see.
Democrats gain power on Tuesday. One of their very first projects will be a socialist takeover of American healthcare. You know what's happening, and your taxes are going to triple, maybe quadruple. You're not going to be happy. I know you well. The Democrat plan would obliterate Obamacare. It will also, which is good, but leave the bad parts behind. It will destroy Medicare.
Okay.
Nobody knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's just take it one at a time, right? Well, I thought you wanted to destroy Obamacare. Are you jealous of what the Democrats are doing? No, he got confused with his lies. Like, mm-hmm. He's like, he just lies so regularly, and they're going to destroy Obamacare. We're going to protect it. Wait, no, that's a bridge too far. Okay, fine, but it's not going to destroy it enough.
I love the delayed reaction on him getting that he said something wrong. He's like, they want to destroy Obamacare, which is good. But leave the bad parts in. What I believe probably happened is he meant to say they're going to destroy Medicare. That's the lie he wants to spread. He doesn't want you to know that he wants to destroy Medicare. So he's saying that they will destroy Medicare by making Medicare bigger and more powerful than ever before. So it is, of course, absurd. But he can't actually say, oh, I misspoke, and correct himself, because he can't ever make a mistake. And so he instead has to go around in circles, and nobody in the room knows what's going on.
But it's actually not just a slip of the tongue, and it's not even just a Freudian slip. Like, it's more significant than that. And why? Because it goes to the heart of why Donald Trump lies in the first place. So throughout the 2016 campaign, he said over and over again, he said, oh, I'm going to protect Medicare and Social Security. Mm-hmm. Now, that wasn't true. He keeps saying now, we're the ones who are going to keep pre-existing conditions in place. That's literally not true. The plans that they propose would end coverage of pre-existing conditions, absolutely. So, so why does he say those things and then take action to the counter? Because his donors and his all of his swamp allies, they want to cut Social Security and Medicare and give more tax cuts to the rich. Mm-hmm. They don't. The insurance companies don't want to cover your pre-existing conditions because then they don't make as much money, and they give a tremendous amount of money to the Republican Party. But he knows that Medicare is popular, Social Security is popular, and here, right there, he knows that Obamacare is popular, that they couldn't kill it. So he went to a lie too far, where he's like, I'm going to protect Medicare and Social Security. Who cares? I keep lying, right? And Obamacare, the Democrats want to destroy him. No, that one was too much, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a lie to nowhere.
Yeah. So, I love the beginning, too, because his voters don't care about truth at all anymore. So he's like, they're going to raise your taxes. Now, that's a typical Republican thing. And there's truth to it if the guys in the audience are billionaires. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, okay. But he can't help himself. They're probably going to triple it or quadruple your taxes. I mean, that's so preposterous. No one in the audience even believes that, right? In his audience believes that. But they're having fun, and they're like, oh, we know our guy's a liar.
Yeah.
And we know he's pathological. And we don't even, like, care what he's saying. We just like, yeah, who are we hating today? Who are we hating? We're hating those Democrats who are trying to take away our Obamacare. That's it.
They will accept anything, Adam. He said a couple days ago, I keep more promises than I make.
There's a lie built into every sentence. There's a lie built into the premise of that sentence. And it's about how he doesn't lie.
Yeah, to be fair, there was like a thin line of blood leaking out of his ear as he said that. I think he needs to see a doctor. Okay, so we're going to take another break, though. Lots more guests to come, one after this. Welcome back to hour two of our election coverage. I want to ask you now, before we transition to more stuff to do, two quick things. One, if you're not already a member, and I know many of you are, today is absolutely the perfect day to do it. Imagine how strong a signal it would send, not just politically around the country, but to the mainstream media if TYT's membership absolutely blew up as progressive candidates do all over the country. That would be awesome. So go to tyt.com/John to become a member today. Also, if you are listening to this as a podcast and you haven't already rated it, please, on iTunes especially, give it a 5-star rating, take a picture of the review that you leave and send it to me, and I will send you a funny GIF. With that said, you've got some comments, right?
I do, and I want to give Brian Stelter at CNN some credit, because he wrote an article about where you can watch coverage. And look, at CNN, they got coverage too, but they mentioned the Young Turks as a place where progressives come to watch. So
I'm shocked at that.
Yeah, so bless their hearts. We'll always give credit where credit is due. So we're asking you guys to comment about your experiences on Election Day as well at tyt.com/share. And we've got Jess writing in, activist member residing in Wisconsin. Thank you for being a member and being an activist member. There's insider and activist. Insider's $4.99 a month. Activist is $10, and you get a little bit more in privileges and stuff that you get as being an activist. But it also helps build home and progressive. So thank you, Jess. Anyway, to continue with our comment, voted this AM and poll workers told me it's been busy, and especially for midterms, and moving along smoothly as well. Also have an idea for a hashtag, #IamTYT. Let's get it trending. Hmm. Jess, I love it. In fact, that's the very first campaign we ever did to build this studio, where the audience gave us $425,000. Otherwise, this place was literally empty when we came in. Some of you old school guys might remember that we had cardboard, like sheet rocks in the back that we use as props with some lighting.
Although I thought it looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
This is awesome too, but that was pretty cool actually.
And but Jess, I love it. Let's do it again. #IamTYT. And if you want to explain why you feel that you're part of the Young Turks, you are the Young Turks. That's my favorite thing in the world. All right, Lacey writes in also on Share. In Michigan, I registered to vote. I had been checking to make sure I still was. When I got to the polls, I was no longer registered. And I was told that 10 people had already had the same problem before I got there at 10 in the morning. Thankfully, they had a process for it so I could still vote.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now that happens all the time, guys, and it's really annoying and terrible, way worse than annoying, because in some places it's normal, in some places voter suppression. They do have to clean out some of the rolls at when, of course, when people die, they don't want them in the voter rolls anymore, and so you got to clean those out. And there is a right way to do that and a wrong way to do that. In Georgia, for example, they chose the wrong way to do that on purpose. So just last year, Brian Kemp, who's Secretary of State and overseeing his own election for governor, cleaned out over 340,000 people from the voter rolls, which is extraordinary. It shatters every record there is. And those people are actually voters. He cleaned out people who he thought were more likely to vote for Democrats. So right now, today in Georgia, there's a lot of people that are going to vote, and people are telling them, you're not registered anymore. But I did register. They're like, sorry, we deregistered you. Right? And so it's so incredibly frustrating. You got to make note of that. And in case Kemp steals that election, which is, and I don't use steal lightly. But we talked about on the show yesterday, there's four different ways that Kemp is trying to cheat. Kemp is a well-known, documented liar. So in 2016, as the Secretary of State officially, he launched a complaint that the Obama Department of Homeland Security had tried to hack into the Georgia elections. That's mental. A lunatic would think that. So the inspector general, though, took it seriously, and they did a report on it. They're like, no, that's not remotely true.
Yeah.
Because he's a lunatic.
And he's doing a similar thing right now.
Yeah, and now he's claiming that the Democrats might do a cyber attack into Georgia's elections. Not remotely true. He hasn't put in a shred of evidence to it. So these guys are dangerous, and they cheat. And Kemp is like I said, one of the worst there is. So that's why we're doing TYT.com/share, because we want to make sure that we hold people accountable. Look, I got more comments. Let's save them for a little bit later in the show. They're wonderful, and thank you guys for joining today. But now, despite the fact that I just gave that fiery rant against a conservative like Brian Kemp, we're going to bring on a conservative, but he's a little bit different than you might expect. He's a populist from the right-wing side, and a really interesting one at that. Joining us now is John Pudner. He is the executive director of Take Back Our Republic. John, welcome to Damage Report and TYT Network.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, I want to get a conservative perspective on today, and I also want to get your unique perspective, because so as we helped Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez win, you are our mirror image in a sense, because you helped Dave Brandt beat the establishment Republican Eric Cantor in his district. So first off, let's just talk about that. I want to talk about that race a little bit more too. But from the right-wing side of populism, how did you defeat the sitting House Majority Leader?
Well, it was people over money, and that's the common thread we have. I mean, they had $5 million. You know, we had $20,000 until the last couple of months, but we had 200 people knocking on doors. So I think you do see the same kind of grassroots populist frustration across the ideological spectrum, despite all the other nasty arguments we have with each other.
That's true. And John also cares about fixing elections and the right way, correcting elections.
Not rigging, fixing.
That's right, not rigging, but fixing. So we'll get to that in a second, too. But let me stay on Dave Brandt for a second. Now, Abigail Spanberger has got him on the ropes in that same district, and she's partly taking a page out of your playbook and talking about how he has all these donors that he does favors to. So what do you make of that?
Well, I should say we really did detach from candidate elections. I mean, you should be happy with me because I'm actually spending all my time trying to pass a referendum that you and I agree on instead of working against candidates that you support. We don't do candidates anymore. So I purposely removed myself, but it's a very close race. Certainly the polling, a couple of New York Times have had Brad up a couple, but several other polls have had him down. And she's certainly very compelling candidate, I'd say. So that one could be one that comes to the wire.
So, John, what's your take on campaign finance reform? I think people that watch this show and this network know I believe we got to get money out of politics. I think we have to end the private financing of elections. But what's your solution for fixing our elections?
Well, the two I'm really focused on, I was on Fargo TV last night doing the final push. They're two very close referenda in the Dakotas that would create an ethics commission, stop just some of the unlimited gift giving that happens to politicians beyond campaign finance reform. And those are both tight races. Some of the reform races should sail through, some of the gerrymandering reform we backed in Michigan. But North Dakota and South Dakota are real bellwethers, I think, because they're such red states. And they're both at 42-43% approval, which is ahead, but the no vote tends to come out at the end when big money's being spent to distort. So I'd ask people to watch that. I think you'll have reform victories in Michigan and other places. I think the Dakotas are the close one. If we can win those races, you know, with a pretty red voting populace, I think that would show the widespread support for campaign finance reform.
So, John, I wanted to ask you a question. So we're both trying to limit the effect of money in politics, get more and more out of it, coming at it from very different directions. And so we know in general, elected candidates aren't generally in favor of massively changing the system that allowed them to get in office in the first case. But over the past year, there's been a lot of high profile candidates, including likely 2020 challengers who've rejected corporate PAC money and money of various different sorts, generally Democrats, though. In your experience, you're coming at this from the right. Is there any movement or momentum on getting elected Republicans to take strong stands against money in politics?
Yes, and the Virginia legislative races last year were very important because, of course, that was a blue wave. And what you really saw there is any candidate taking money from Dominion Power seemed to lose, even in a safe district. And a lot of Republicans got that message there and not taking that particular check. So you're seeing that kind of thing. The other thing I'm pointing out to the conservatives who thought this was just a huge advantage for them to have this unlimited, you know, First Amendment myth on never limiting money. You know, Nick Silver, I don't know if it'll be right or wrong this year, but one thing he has calculated is Democrats are going to probably get at least five more seats just because of the money disparity in the last month. So for the Republicans who knew this was a bad system but just thought it was their advantage, I think they need to question that at this stage and say, hey, you know, if the money were even, they'd probably be five seats better off tonight than they'll actually end up, whatever that number is.
Well, John, I mean, it seems like the number one complaint that conservatives have is George Soros. And what's the problem with George Soros? He puts money into politics, right? So let's get the Soros money out. Let's get the Koch brothers' money out.
Tom Steyer.
Tom Steyer money. By the way, John and I, we didn't get to it, but we had prepared this story last week. Of the top 20 donors in this election midterm election cycle, a huge percentage are liberals. It's well over 50% that are liberals. Now, the number one guy is Sheldon Adelson. He's a conservative. But, you know, you've got Soros and Steyer and so many others that you've never even heard of. But it's insane to have this bidding war, an auction between rich liberals and rich conservatives, and leaves out the voters entirely. Now, so that's partly what we agree on. But as people listen to this, I mean, look, you support Dave Brandt. I don't agree with Dave Brandt at all on any of the politics. So that's clear that you're a conservative in that sense. But how else are you conservative? So I just want people to understand it's just not an agreement fest on the other policy issues.
Yeah, we want things to be driven by populism. Our vision is that Americans at some point in the near future once again believe that their elected officials are representing them and not out-of-state donors. So you hit the point directly. Now, for me, I'd like to see them representing conservatives in a lot of red districts, but I want them to represent whoever their constituency is. But the idea that, you know, a Democrat's real constituency is in New York and, you know, perhaps Republicans in Texas, you know, wherever the big check writers are around the country, that's what we want to break down. So I think saying getting money out of politics, I mean, that's a means to an end, curtailing certain money. The real end is no one believes anymore they're being represented, and a republic just can't function long term if the people don't believe their representatives are representing them when they go to Congress.
So, John, would you be in favor of a convention where both conservatives and progressives get to propose amendments on campaign finance?
I do. And, you know, I hear these arguments, you know, from the left, well, they'll outlaw abortion at one of these, from the right, they'll outlaw guns. And, you know, not to get too far in the weeds, but you only need 13 states to stop anything from happening there. I think money in politics is one of the only things at a convention where you could get 38, 39, 40 states to agree on things, and that's what it takes. And so the biggest argument against it is, well, what if it's a runaway convention and it does other things? Now, I think when people are this fed up and they don't feel like the stakeholders who, as John said earlier, one with the existing system are willing to change, you need to take these kind of dramatic matters.
So, John Putner, Executive Director of Take Back Our Republic, I thank you for joining us, and thank you for showing people in the country that as much as we disagree on the other issues, that there are honest conservatives, and I would hope that that you agree that we're on the honest progressive side, that it can actually agree from time to time on the most important issues, which is that we should live in a democracy that represents the voters and not the powerful elite.
You're right. And my last thing is these referenda are neat because they do give hardcore conservatives and progressives a chance to work together because there's no R or D on it. So I'm hoping that starts some of the, you know, ground up kind of bringing the country back together here despite our differences.
All right, John, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Okay, with that, we are going to take a short break, come back, lots of news to get to. And we've got one story involving Ted Cruz that I think you'll agree will be nothing but fun after this. Welcome back, everyone. Okay, more members' comments.
Yeah, Subhas writes in, I took my last 1.5 days of PTO to start watching TYT election coverage, and I know I'll be up with you all night, so took tomorrow off as well, helped a coworker find her ID for voting today, and made sure she found her polling station. Every vote counts.
Yes.
I love that. I mean, I don't want to Spike Lee it too much, but yeah, if you want to take off work or school to make sure you vote and watch TYT, I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying. Okay, so now let me go to Emily is Angry. It's already a handle I like. I've been watching TYT on YouTube for a long time, since I was a kid who knew nothing about politics. Now I'm 21 years old, a mom, and finally a TYT member. Thank you so much for Cenk, Anna, John, Ben, Jimmy, and everyone doing such great work. You guys are an inspiration to all of us. I'm wearing TYT shirt proudly as I go and vote. All blue and green here in Northern New York. We are too strong. Dang. Thank you, Emily. That's wonderful of you. And I do have an update on the competition. So, look, you can do tyt.com/join to become a member, but you could also do it through one of the host names. And we're doing a fun little competition. So you got tyt.com/Anna, John, Cenk, etc., right? I have the new numbers in, and John just cannot catch me, and it's hilarious. He continues to lose by 2 to 5 members. Like, we keep going up, all of us are going up, and he gets close and just can't put it over the top. Mm-hmm. So I maintain a 5-person lead over you, okay? But meanwhile, we're nowhere near Anna. She comes back on the first day, and she had a lead to begin with, even when she was on vacation. Boom, she's gone.
No, how much did she add?
She's now 26 above me.
What was she before?
She was like 12 or 14. Now she's 26 above me.
Anna is the worst.
/ apparently the best.
Here's the thing, though, everybody. So we've been getting these updates. Do you know this list he gets is written in pencil? Who the hell knows if this is even accurate? They're just writing whatever they want on there.
No. I wouldn't pull a Brian Kemp. The list is real. All right. Anyway, by the way, tyt.com/marijuana. is on the board. 6 people have joined up through that.
I could be beating Cenk if all of you iguana folk.
All right, I got to read these last 2 because I love it. It's from Twitter. Hashtag TYT live to talk to us today on Twitter. Cynthia Joey says, wore my Very Stable Genius t-shirt to vote today. I just moved from LA to Utah, so I'm trying to do my part. Love it. And Mandy Blizzardborn, already fun, says, I love that TYT, a progressive network, will have a conservative person on and honestly chat about stuff with him. That's wonderful. That's the meaning of nonpartisan. Thank you, Mandy, referring to the guest we just had on, John Pudner. Speaking of guests, John, take it away.
Okay, we're going to have a guest in just a couple of minutes. There's 1 or 2 things I want to get to really fast. You got the video ready? We here at TYT very much want Ted Cruz to go down. And he's, I think, given Beto a great shot. A lot of fumbles that he's made in the campaign trail. He decided to do an interview with an opposition figure, an opposition dog, actually. And it got pretty fun, as you'll see.
And I just want to say to Triumph, my advice is walk away.
Walk away.
And just remember, it wasn't the Republicans. It was the Democrats that took you into the vet to get fixed. And there is freedom on the other side.
I support spaying. I support spaying and neutering, just like Trump did to you.
Come on.
Dude, doggone it.
Doggone it.
He crushed him. Dude, don't do it, man. You think you're going to outwit a comedian, a comic who's been doing it for a long time, even if it's a dog? Bitch, please. Okay. Yeah. Oh, he just got owned. And look at his face. He thinks he's scary. Oh, I'm so clever.
Like, I'm
so clever. And then when he said, oh, you got neutered. Not as much fun at the end there.
It's true. I did get neutered. Okay, really fast, though, on Beto, he's been a very inspirational figure inside of Texas. That is coming out on Election Day with the sorts of people that he's driving out to vote, in some cases for the first time, and in some cases under very difficult circumstances like this.
You were here when Beto came to cast his vote, and you told me this was very emotional for you. Why?
Well, because I wasn't expecting it, and because we think he's pretty important, and we're honored that he was here.
Why is he so important?
Because he represents everything that Donald Trump isn't.
He represents everything that Donald Trump isn't.
So that woman obviously is a senior citizen. She had to wheel herself out to vote. She had to wheel her oxygen tank along with her and just happened to be surprised by Beto at the polls. If you can see obviously how much it's affecting her. So super high profile, important race, which we're going to be tracking throughout the day.
And one of the top issues, in fact, the top issue for Beto in this race was healthcare.
Yeah.
And obviously that matters a lot. That's his district. And that's why he was voting there. Mm-hmm. And she was emotional because she got to see him as she was voting. And that is pretty neat. And look, that's what's part of what's wonderful about our democracy, right? That we all go vote. He votes too, right? And, he votes right next to you.
Yeah. And it's great to see someone so invested in a candidate, not as a result of them telling them that the media is fake and you should hate this person and go kill that person. Okay, with that, we do have one more guest. We saved the best for last, certainly. Nomi Kantz joining the Damage Report. Nomi, welcome back to the show.
Hey guys, that's so sweet. Well, you make me cry right before I come on.
it's a pretty emotional day, and we're very glad to have you here. Are you in New York right now?
I am. I'm in Astoria in our very, very small campaign office. You know, for someone running for office, it's a pretty quiet day here because it's election day. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot you can do other than make phone calls and knock on doors and then just wait and pray and hope that everything turns out great.
So you are running for a New York City public advocate, and that is obviously a race that we're going to be talking a lot about. On today's election day, though, New York has some very important candidates that have been getting a lot of attention. What are you looking to see happen, both inside of New York and around the country on election day?
So in New York, it's interesting because we, for those of you who don't know, and I did a lot of this reporting at TYT, we had this thing called the IDC. It was eight Democrats who were conferencing with Republicans, and they were primaried after many activists organized for years. They were primaried in September, and almost all of them lost their primary. Now, there's still one more on the ballot here in New York City, Diane Savino, who's being challenged by Jasmine Robinson in Staten Island and parts of Brooklyn. But you know, our state Senate is about to turn. So it looks like one of the key races in New York City is going to be with Andrew Gonardis, who's in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. He is running against the only New York State Senator in New York City who's a Republican. And this guy is not your, pro-business Republican. He's kind of crazy. I mean, you just Google the guy. He's Marty Golden. His chief of staff helped organize that Proud Boys event that you may have seen go social. On social, Andrew's a progressive. I've personally known years. He's a dear friend of mine. I'm tonight at his election party, and I'm going to be volunteering right after this. Aside from that, I would go and look at some of these congressional races. Republicans have been pouring a ton of money into New York, into places like Long Island with Pete King, who's being challenged by Luba Gretchen Shirley. And the effects of that are the Republicans are putting so much money into that area in Long Island that it's affecting down ballot. That the state senator, John Brooks, and Christine Pellegrino, who's an assemblywoman in a Republican plus 14 district, she flipped that district 40 points just a few months after Trump was elected. And now she's in the fight of her life because of the top of the ballot. Pete King is trying to protect his seat. So Republicans are in that district, and it might have, hopefully it'll be Democrats winning across the board. But if Democrats do lose their seats in Long Island, it's probably because of that Republican congressional money being poured into the district. We have Max Rose out in Staten Island running against Donovan. Upstate, there's some great races. Delgado, Dana Balter, they're tough fights. It looks like Delgado is probably going to do well. But, there's not a lot in New York City. There is a ballot initiative for some charter revisions that are pro-democracy. But, New York is not as blue as we would think. And there are a lot of voting problems right now where the scanners aren't working because of wet ballots. But, if we had early voting and voting reform with the Democratic Senate, we may not have those issues.
Yeah.
So, Nomi, it's a great point about Pellegrino. And that was why people thought there might be a blue wave really early on, because of the giant 40-point swing in her race. And it's the money in politics is maddening. It just is an endless flow. So you win one great race, and then they pour more and more money in. What I'm curious about is the state of the Democratic Party in New York as we stand, though. Because so Cuomo won his primary, obviously, and so he's good. He's set in that sense. But as you pointed out, the IDC got wiped out. And so have you felt a disturbance in the force? Right? Have you sensed, has the Democratic Party in New York that is so pro-establishment, led by Cuomo, adjusted at all? Has there been a recalibration since the IDC was destroyed in the primaries, or no?
Well, Governor Cuomo, and this is well reported, Governor Cuomo was the architect of the IDC. You can go back to early articles from a few years ago where he took credit for the IDC, that he designed it. This is not like, who's really behind it? No, he openly said he was behind it, but now he's against the IDC. He flipped very soon. As soon as he saw that they were that the IDC was potentially not going to win, he wanted to be with where the wind was blowing. So he is out there. He did a rally with Andrew Gnardis yesterday. He supported him, but so did the progressives. He sees the wind is blowing towards progressives. Now, institutionally within the Democratic Party, does that mean that the Democratic Party will start funding more progressives? Probably not. But that's why it's important in the next state committee elections, we get progressives in New York State running and going out there and petitioning to be on state committee, because the Democratic Party is a reflection of its voting members, just like the DNC is, just like the county committees are in the counties who select so many candidates.
Well, thank you, Nomi. Great to have you on. Hopefully, we can have you back on in the near future to break down where we go from here, specifically in New York. So thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Talk soon.
Thank you. And thank you, Cenk, as well. This is just the beginning, of course. Full day of coverage. We're going to have a little break, come back. Aggressive Progressives, 2 hours. Get ready for that. And Cenk will be joining them as well.
Yeah, so 2 hour Aggressive Progressive. But we're going to take a little bit of a break here, but don't go anywhere. Come right back, and I'll be at the top of Aggressive Progressives with a regular host as well. So we'll see you there.
Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.